Welcome to the RG Podcast Network and the RG Business Navigate series. This podcast presents topical global business stories that affect Bermuda. Series host Shivani Seth interviews business leaders and experts in finance, insurance, reinsurance, risk, accounting, and other business services. Enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to the RG Business Navigate series. I'm Shivani Seth and I'm your host. Today I'm delighted to welcome in the studio Stephen Rees-Davis, partner at Carey Olson. Welcome, Steve.
Thank you very much, Shivani.
I'm immensely looking forward to this podcast. It's supposed to be all about crypto, but from our conversations we're going to learn a lot more. So before we actually deep dive into this world of crypto, could I ask you, Steve, to tell me about Carey Olson and your role within the organization?
Thank you, Shivani. Carey Olson is a leading offshore law firm. We're the fourth largest in the world. We are one of the oldest at 125 years old. We've just celebrated an anniversary. But we've only been in Bermuda for 6 years. We have offices in Bermuda, Cayman, BVI, London, and also Singapore and Hong Kong and South Africa.
And tell me about your role, Steve, within the organization. How long have you been with Carey Olson?
So I joined Carey Olson in 2001 as a partner to help develop and grow the corporate practice, and very specifically the fintech sector practice that has been ranked only 2.5 years of being there. We now ranked tier one by Chambers.
No, thank you very much. So let's kick off now. We hear a lot about crypto and more recently crypto casualties, which we'll delve into later. But quite frankly, I'm not sure I actually have a proper understanding of what crypto is really all about. And Steve, your reputation precedes you. You've been recognized as one of Bermuda's leading practitioners in fintech and blockchain by Who's Who Legal, as well as being named amongst the top 50 crypto professionals for 2023 as chosen by City Wealth. So I believe I have the right man for the job today. So let me begin. Could you please shed some light on what crypto is?
Well, first of all, I think we should look at the word crypto. I think it's a dangerous term. It is a generic term. Crypto has basically come from cryptographic, which I'm not going to go into. I'm sure you're pleased to hear on this particular podcast. But crypto is really the generic term given to anything that is a cryptocurrency or a digital token or a digital coin. It is defined in Bermuda as digital assets. And I would rather we use that term because that is very clearly recognized as what it is. And when we talk about what it is, most people see it as or think of it as some sort of digital money. It can be, but it's not just that. The thing about digital assets really is about where it comes from. And I think if you understand where it comes from, then you get a better understanding of the kind of digital assets that exist. Digital assets can be all kinds of digital representation of value, so money, or rights, or ownership, or value. But, as I say, the real thing is to understand where it comes from, and it comes from blockchain. And blockchain is the generic term given to distributed ledger technology.
Okay.
That's what I really want to sort of explain to people. And all that is blockchain is a supercharged database. So when we think database, think Amazon, think Facebook. They are centrally controlled by those companies, and they contain all sorts of information that you can access, but you rely upon them to organize it, them to own it, them to facilitate it. You're trusting them. And on Facebook particularly, we can contact through LinkedIn and Facebook, but somebody's controlling, they're the middlemen. What blockchain does through it's not magic, it's just old technology, believe it or not. There are about 7 different types of old technology that for the first time, when brought together and put on software to deliver this type of database, supercharged database, means that you can get rid of the middlemen. So you and I could actually transact without having anyone in between us.
Okay.
And another thing about blockchain is it's transparent. Everyone can see our transactions on it. But there's also a level of privacy. There's a level of, the crypto point, by the way, means it's extremely secure.
Okay.
And information that you put into that database is what we call immutable, meaning you can't change it.
Okay, so incredibly efficient.
Yes.
And secure.
Yes. Think of blockchain as supercharged database. It is going to change the way in which we do anything and everything. It streamlines existing archaic infrastructure.
Well, anything that can simplify my life is very welcome.
It'll do that.
Okay, so how did you actually become an expert in, I'm scared now to use the word crypto, so I'll go with digital assets. And really, tell me about your role that you play as a lawyer for companies wanting to set up here in Bermuda.
So, history. I've been a lawyer, I've been working in the law, 24 years now.
Okay.
And over that time, I've always serviced as a corporate lawyer, which means I deal with corporate governance, I deal with setting up companies, I deal with advising how to raise money and how to exit an investment if some entrepreneur wants to get out, or initial public offerings, all those sorts of things. But usually my clients have been technology based. And I like to joke that my career started in what we call the hardware.
Okay.
So think subsea cabling, think satellites, telecommunications. And then we went from hardware to software. Mm-hmm. So think Google, Amazon, Apple, anything to do with e-commerce, internet. And from the software, I say we've now gone to the nowhere. The nowhere being effectively decentralized autonomous organizations, better known as DAOs. Effectively, this technology is usable across the internet in a way that we've never seen before. And it allows us to do magical things that we've never seen before. So that's been my career. And how I ended up with the digital asset part is that as the technology, or the lawyer known for dealing with technology clients, when digital assets or crypto or blockchain first came to the sort of international scene or the regulated scene or the legal scene, and Bermuda was looking at it and saying, we should welcome some of these businesses to Bermuda. It could be another pillar of our economy.
Okay.
I was thrust upon it because it's technology driven. And so I got involved with some of the working groups to understand the technology, because if you don't understand the technology, how on earth can you regulate it? And helped the government and other players in the market, or stakeholders, we'd call them, to develop that system here in Bermuda. And that's really where I've got my expertise from. It started about 6 years ago. But it's meant going back to basics and learning from scratch something that is new, which is quite exciting for a lawyer at my stage.
I can imagine. No, thank you. But, you know, the most, what we kept reading about, was it a year, 2 years ago now at this stage, was the most famous crypto empire collapse, the FTX. So perhaps you can explain to me now, they did use the word crypto, so I hope you don't mind me using that. Why did this happen, and how can we be reassured that something like this won't happen in Bermuda?
Well, if you wanted to, we could spend 2 hours talking about FTX alone, but I think there's a key part of this that will help you understand why it didn't happen in Bermuda and really what happened. To understand FTX, I think the first thing is to know FTX was not in Bermuda, okay? And they weren't here for a reason.
Okay.
And it's because we regulated, and we regulated well, which we can talk about.
We are coming to,
we'll
yes.
come to another question, I'm sure. But FTX, I'll tell you what I'll do. I want to quote John J. Ray III, who was effectively appointed the chief executive officer or the what they call the bankruptcy officer, if you like, of FTX when it first filed for Chapter 11 in the US. And just to show you his credibility, he was the man in charge of the Enron debacle.
Okay.
I say in charge of, he dealt with it after it collapsed. So he's the guy who goes in and helps creditors of these companies sort out where are the assets, what went on.
Okay.
And in his, in literally, it's only paragraph 5 of a very long indictment, or declaration, sorry. And he says, never in my career have I seen such a complete failure of corporate controls and such a complete absence of trustworthy financial information as occurred here. From a compromised systems integrity, faulty regulatory oversight abroad, to the concentration of control in the hands of a very small group of inexperienced, unsophisticated, and potentially compromised individuals. This situation is unprecedented. So what you've got is a sophisticated individual who's gone in to assess what went on. And basically, the people running FTX, which includes SBF, or Sam Bankman-Fried, who's now been found guilty and is in jail for a very long time, they took people's money or funds or tokens, whatever it was they took, and then they used them for improper purposes.
Okay.
They weren't maintaining them for the benefit of those people. That's just one allegation. Fraud, improper use, misrepresentation to investors who invested money in the companies as well. So think of it this way. There are people who invest in the company at the top. In other words, they will buy shares, traditional interests in the company.
Okay.
But there are also people who then are serviced by that company. They'll buy tokens across that person's or that company's exchange. You've got customers and you've got investors, both of whom seem to have, well, they were not protected in this situation. And the reason for that is because the activities of that group were done through companies in unregulated jurisdictions.
Okay.
Mainly. That's simplifying it massively.
And no, but thank you.
I hope anyone who is in the know forgives me for that very simplistic explanation.
I think that's what we need, actually, so that we can understand that better. Well, and you talk about regulation, actually.
Yes.
So let's have a look now at where we are here in Bermuda. What role does the BMA play in regulating the fintech industry as a whole?
So, well, I think it's worth just going back just a small moment. If we look at where Bermuda sits in terms of regulation of digital assets, blockchain, this whole sector.
Yes, please.
We were effectively the first jurisdiction that drafted, issued, and regulated under sector-specific legislation. What I mean by that is that we drafted, back in 2017, law and regulation to govern the risks that we assessed existed in this sector back then. Okay, and what we had to do, I say we, I'm talking about the government, I'm talking about AG chambers, the Attorney General, I'm talking
right.
about the regulator and other stakeholders. It's not just me and the Premier. There was many, many people involved. And we assessed it and went, okay, what is everybody worried about with crypto and blockchain and what's going on? And back then, obviously, we didn't know FTX. Or if we did, we certainly weren't aware of what was going to happen to it. But it was very clear that the main concerns in this sector are about fraud. So if I want to issue a token to you and you give me funds for it, that whatever the promise is, whatever that value in that token, whatever I've done with that, whatever I'm giving to you, there's the potential that I could just run off with the money you've given me.
Exactly my fear.
A lot. Yes, and there are many that are scams of that nature.
Okay.
So the first thing was, well, we used to call them initial coin offerings, ICOs. And it really just meant that you could launch these offerings. I can say, hey, everyone invest in my company. I'm going to build a wonderful platform and I'm going to provide these wonderful future services, but you need to buy these tokens and these tokens will eventually be able to be used on my platform. And many people did just invest thinking, great, I'm going to be a multi-billionaire because there's so many people who make money in this. And they didn't really research it. They didn't look into it. It was a bubble, if you like. And many of the people who got that money were so unsophisticated themselves or even intentionally took the money and ran and bought Ferraris and Lamborghinis and played well. Or some just didn't know how to manage businesses.
Right.
Okay, so the first thing is this fraud. Then there's money laundering and terrorist financing. This technology is so good, but it has a double-edged sword. One side, it can protect us against those things, and the other side, if not used properly or regulated, or its use regulated, we don't regulate the technology, we regulate its use. But if it's not regulated properly, there is also the chance that criminals could take advantage of it. And that was another fear, particularly
okay.
for money laundering. How do we trace this stuff? It's since been proven, by the way, that this is the most traceable thing ever, and therefore only really silly and stupid criminals would actually use digital assets for their purposes. Anyway, I'm digressing there. It was fraud, money laundering, terrorist financing. But then, as Bermuda is a sophisticated jurisdiction with a regulator that fully understands more than just that, we understand that actually to have a resilient, in other words, businesses that can survive risks that come along, downturns in markets, you need more than just anti-money laundering KYC
okay.
policies. You need more than just anti-fraud disclosing documents. What you need is good corporate governance. What that means is that there is a board of directors whose obligations are to the company, and then you've got managers who are held responsible and accountable for managing the oversight of the company, and then there are people actually conducting the business of the company, and that there are internal checks and there are policies to follow and there are audits. So we can check, did you do that? Oh, you didn't do that. Well, you should have done that. Let's remedy that.
Right.
All these things in place that you see in all traditional financially regulated businesses. And that's what we built
okay.
in Bermuda. So it mirrors very much what you would expect if you were to try and open a bank here or an insurance company or anything else that's effectively a financially regulated industry.
Okay, thank you. And I note more recently that the government announced, actually last November, that it would be launching a blockchain-based stimulus token for use in Bermuda's retail market. I'm sorry for my thickness here, but what does that mean exactly?
What does that mean? Okay, so one use of blockchain is to create coins or tokens, digital coins or tokens. As I say, it's only one use. But what that means is you can effectively think of the Bermuda dollar, okay, which is not that much different from the US dollar, except it's only accepted in Bermuda. Bermuda dollar has been issued by the BMA for over 50 years now. I think 1969, February the 20th. Why I know that data is weird. But anyway, it's clearly embedded in my brain. But they've been issuing paper notes and managing that and responsible that for Bermuda for over 50 years. That's paper money. And obviously, when you put the paper money in the bank account, you've now got a bank account that says, and you think you've got digital money. Really, that's just a database that the bank maintains of how much you've got or how much they owe you, actually. Think of each note. Every time a bank note is issued, it has a particular number on it, which basically represents exactly what it is. So if you look at the Fed in the US, it issues those notes. And when notes are received and put into bank accounts, it's noted amongst the system that this particular note is now in this particular bank account.
Okay.
All we're doing, or all the government's looking to do, is to say, how can we improve our issuance of money? How can we improve the way in which we transact business in Bermuda? We can use dollars in shops, US dollars. Bermuda dollars are not used anywhere else. Why not digitize it? Why not actually use blockchain, which has some phenomenally great attributes, like it streamlines the whole process. The government could issue financial aid very simply by dropping tokens into people's wallets.
Okay.
Wallets, we can go into another time, but effectively they can give people financial aid very quickly, very swiftly, instantaneously. And then it can be spent using your phones or cards in Bermuda, pretty much like you can do now, only it's all on the blockchain. So think of Apple Pay. But effectively, it's on the blockchain. And when I say on the blockchain, what it means is there is a permanent record of where every token was issued, to who, when, and how it was spent, and where it goes through the system. And it is done on a reliability system. In other words, people can't change it. And you've got a full history. Imagine if you go beyond that. Go beyond just having a Bermuda dollar token that we can all use to pay taxes in Bermuda and buy services. It's, you know, it lubricates the wheels of the commerce, if you like, of business. So just think of it as a digital version of the dollar that you already have, only it's safe and secure coming off the blockchain. But imagine if we then started to go and say, why don't we put the property register, the land register, on blockchain? Like, why don't we issue tokens that represent interests in land, only to be held by those that are legally entitled to, but then you don't have to worry about all these ancient papers and plans that need to be looked at and safely guarded in paper vaults, in vaults, but in paper form. What about if we were to tokenize and issue tokens that represented an interest in a company? So you could have a share register on the blockchain. It's just, again, I'm going back to that point. All it is a database. The BMA have a database that effectively understands how many Bermuda dollars are in circulation. Why can't we have a database based on blockchain that everybody can participate in and use and validate? In other words, we all get to see, we all get to participate, we all get to benefit.
You're certainly making me feel like it's an incredibly secure system all round. So thank you. No, thank you for that explanation. Perhaps an obvious question, but I have it here, so I'm going to ask it anyway. Why is Bermuda then an attractive jurisdiction for digital asset companies?
That is a good question, actually. It's not a bad question at all. There are numerous reasons. The key reason is that we have been recognized as a sophisticated jurisdiction, first and foremost. In other words, if you've got a Bermuda-regulated company, a company regulated by the Bermuda Monetary Authority, transacting business or existing somewhere else, other regulators recognize the BMA. So we have credibility. Businesses in this space are going from, we're going through a change. When this all first kicked off in 2017, 18, 19, when Bermuda first regulated, this obviously didn't just kick off then, it kicked off way before, but when it kicked off for us, I think, we were seeing people come and want to issue tokens to raise money for small projects. We had people coming to run exchanges where people could trade across them, which is ironic because then the exchange becomes the middleman that blockchain can get rid of, but right. That's another story. I think to understand it, it's the sector itself is developing, it's maturing. And people who are investing in this sector, when I say investing, I mean investing in companies that then service the sector, not businesses that come along and buy the tokens. That's a different okay. ballgame altogether. But those that are actually investing in it or who are interested in potentially purchasing tokens for whatever reason or getting involved, getting exposure to that risk, are looking to ensure that they don't end up doing it through an FTX or an unregulated business. They realize right. that there is so much unknown and there's still so much potential for fraud or misrepresentation, et cetera, and the risk, the management of the risk. So coming to Bermuda to set up your business means that when you go to your clients or when you go to your investors to raise capital for your project, you can say, and I'm regulated by the BMA. Not only are they regulated by the BMA, but they've got the probably the most experienced regulatory professionals that understand the technology that are regulating them. So they know what they're doing, and which is actually why you can get a license probably in Bermuda probably more quickly than any other jurisdiction. And it's okay. not because it's easy and quick to get. These are not being flung out. Dime a dozen, trust me, they're difficult to obtain. But because you've got a very focused team at the BMA who know what they're doing and understand the technology, if you've got the right people coming to actually get that license who can deliver on those criteria, the what it is they're required to prove to get the license, i.e. they are fit and proper persons, that they have the right policies and procedures and protections in place, they know how to measure the risk of their business, they're protecting their clients' interests, all of that, then they can get a license, which is a badge of, almost like a badge of honour. It means something in the world of digital assets.
Well, certainly with whichever industry you look at, Bermuda's strength lies in being underpinned by the Bermuda Monetary Authority.
Absolutely. So the insurance sector is a very good example of that.
So we talk about tokens. How many companies have issued tokens in Bermuda?
Well, I think the question really, what we should look at is how many companies have a license in Bermuda.
Okay.
Because when we say how many companies have issued tokens, it focuses on one activity, issuance of tokens. What you want to look at is this. There are two regimes in Bermuda. One that regulates the provision of services to the sector. Okay. And there are eight types of digital asset business activity that can go on. Think exchange. So we have exchanges that have come to the Bermuda. Mm-hmm. They've got a license to run an exchange. That means that you can go and put your tokens on the exchange and you can trade it across the exchange. You've got others that provide custody services. So you can deposit your tokens with them. They will custody it for you and safeguard it. You've got others that will provide trust services or people who will conduct those activities for you. There are eight different, effectively, digital asset businesses. And they are licensed. You get a license to effectively conduct those businesses and you have to maintain that license. In other words, the BMA will hold the company accountable for meeting all the rules. There's also another regime called digital asset issuance regime. That effectively is standalone. There's no license. It's a permission-based system. And what that is if we go back to when I said, imagine I wanted to raise $1 million for to basically develop a project or a system or whatever it may be, my business. Well, I could issue tokens and people could buy those tokens. Let's say I issue 1 million tokens for $1 million. Everyone who pays a dollar gets one token and I use that money to then develop my business. That is a slightly different thing. You're raising money or funds by the issuance of tokens. And those tokens, can represent anything you want. But if you're buying one, what you hope it represents is some interest in the business that either you can use that token within the business or that perhaps you're a participator in that business and the profits and success and risk with it. So when you say how many have issued,
I think I need to change that to how many are licensed.
I think
straight away,
because I actually don't think anyone has been given permission to issue under the digital asset issuance regime. There are certainly a number of companies who have issued because they're exempt. That's a different thing altogether, but they're exempt for good reason. How many are licensed? 24 as of I think today.
Okay.
And I know that there are a few others. We've got clients who have received approval, but they're waiting for the licenses because there are certain conditions they've got to meet. And so there will be more in the pipeline, but 24. And of those, 12 of them are licensed to provide services like issuance, selling, and redemption of tokens.
Okay. No, thank you. That provides that clarity. And perhaps another silly question, which I'm going to ask anyway. Do you find that companies are also leaving Bermuda to set up elsewhere, or are they quite content?
No, I think that's not a silly question either. But if you understand the situation, you sort of realise actually that it's a non-question. Those who come to set up in Bermuda come to set up in Bermuda for a good reason, and they have to go through a lot legal and regulatory advice to get their license. They will have done their research. You don't go and get a DABA license and then decide, oh, I don't like this anymore, I'm moving.
I'll go somewhere else, right.
That's not how it works. And also the sector itself. So actually, just on that point, so there are people who come, and I will talk to people all the time about what it takes to get a license and the criteria and what we're doing and why and everything, and help them understand Bermuda to see, is Bermuda fit for their objectives and their business? And there are many who don't. They will not come and get a license here because it doesn't fit with them for one reason or another. Maybe this team is just not sophisticated enough, or they don't have enough money to obtain a license or to maintain the standards required to run a business in that manner. Some decide that they don't want to be regulated. Great, don't come to Bermuda. They're the sort of businesses that may suit another jurisdiction.
Okay.
So there are some companies that just choose not to come here after having done good research. But those that come and get a license don't then choose to leave for any reason. There are some that in the normal course of business, there will be some commercial failures.
Okay.
Simply that they've determined that this isn't working and we should wind up. Okay, there are businesses that will do that. That's not a failure. That's not a, oh dear, there's an FTX blow up in Bermuda. That's nothing to do with that. In fact, it shows that the system works. Because what it means is that the board of directors of these companies have to consider the financial wherewithal of their company at all times. And if they feel that they get into a position where they can't maintain the business, i.e. they're going to go insolvent, they should take appropriate procedures and measures and notify the BMA. And that's what they do. Just like any insurance company or any fund or any other business is obliged to do.
Right, yes.
Okay? And in fact, it helps prevent any kind of blow-ups or mass failures, because people are constantly having to assess that risk. That's what's so good about it. And when you talk about, oh, but there are people perhaps going elsewhere to get licenses, and in fact, some of our biggest digital asset companies in Bermuda also have licenses elsewhere. That's not because they prefer the other jurisdiction. There is not one jurisdiction where you come to and then you'll service the entire world from, because each jurisdiction is unique.
Okay.
There are reasons why a client might have a DABA license in Bermuda and another license in Singapore, for example.
Right.
There are different reasons for those licenses to access different markets for different purposes.
No, thank you. Important to note that. Yeah. So clearly a very exciting and futuristic industry with immense growth in store. What I really need to ask you next is it easy to find the right talent? Is it easy to attract talent for this industry here in Bermuda? We have a constant war on talent in many different industries. How are you finding it in the fintech space?
I don't think it's really that much different. I think attracting talent is one thing. That just means being attractive. But finding talent is a different thing. That's actually going out and trying to look for it. I think in the world today, if we look at the sector and the type of people that this sector needs, there are plenty of them.
Okay.
And there are many people flooding out of universities and colleges with whatever experience and degrees that are needed, or even BTECs and coding, for example, engineering. But you mustn't forget, this is not an industry just full of coders. Okay, it is an industry of different people. You need lawyers, you need directors, you need compliance officers, you need accountants, you need receptionists, you need office managers. You need everybody that you would need in any other normal financially regulated business. So the difference perhaps is that because the technology is so new, it's actually probably easy to attract because it's quite sexy. So for some people, it's like, oh, I work in crypto. But but in terms of talent, we do have some amazing talent in Bermuda. And a lot of them actually are sitting in other industries, but they've moved across into digital assets, realizing that actually being a compliance officer of the digital asset world is not that much different from being a compliance officer at a bank. So you can easily move the skills that people are already trained in. But what we do need is some more, I think, growing, and it's happening, some more technology-focused training and education. That way the Bermudians have more of an opportunity, those resident here, to actually get involved in those companies that are growing. There is a finite amount of us on the island, and therefore it's, you know, once they've all been hired, who does everybody else hire?
Okay.
We're 24 companies. If we double that and get to 48, where are we going to get the next 24 compliance officers from?
Right, I see. No, that transferable skill set is important to note, because I think it's something, if you think about the fintech industry, you think as an individual, oh, gosh, no, I know nothing about that. I have nothing to offer. But as you rightly said, very much a transferable skill set.
Yes, once you understand what the technology is, as I say, everyone discussing crypto versus actually understanding blockchain, once you understand blockchain and you know what crypto therefore is, and you know what the business you're getting into is doing in relation to that, then you can understand it.
Okay, thank you.
And opportunities galore.
Brilliant. So I know when we spoke earlier, before prior to this podcast, you told me about some upcoming fintech conferences and summits being held here in Bermuda. Could you give me a brief walkthrough as to what's on offer?
Yes, well, in Bermuda, back in October, we actually had the BDA's tech summit. That's
okay.
Run by the Bermuda Development Agency. And coming up in April and May, I think it's April 29th to May 3rd, we've got the 5th International Tech Summit being held here in Bermuda, organized between Penrose and Bitter, which is Biter. I probably pronounced it completely
like
wrong.
Sounds like a beer it's, for a minute.
It's the Bermuda Innovation and Technology Association.
Okay.
And they're co-hosting, I understand. And that is going to provide, it's a technology summit, so you can expect speakers, guest speakers from all around the world. It's to basically attract and bring together innovators, leaders, builders, and everyday people from all around the world and in Bermuda together. So there'll be talks on digital assets, but also beyond digital assets, so technology in a more wide way. So think of Web3, so think of three-dimensional technology. Think of anything tech beyond digital assets will also be involved. There's going to be a career day, a career fair, and a demonstration day. That should be exciting. People coming along to actually demonstrate some of the technology that's been developed. And you only have to look around the roads in Bermuda and look at all the electric cars. That's tech. Okay. Whips. That's the little scooters, not the ice cream.
Okay.
That's tech, too. It's all around us. There'll be educational workshops, I understand. There'll be a startup pitch competition. There'll be curated business-to-business meetings. It's really a chance for anyone who's interested in finding out more about innovation and technology in Bermuda and how Bermuda works, but also how it's working around the world, what's going on in the tech space around the world. It's worth coming to. There'll be the usual private dinners, roundtables, and leisure activities and networking.
Okay, well, incredibly,
it's a fun week.
It is a fun week, and incredibly impressive that we can bring it here to Bermuda, so you don't have to travel. It's right here on our doorstep for you
to
learn more about.
Absolutely.
So I suppose I just have one final question for you today, Steve. So looking to the future, is any of this here to stay, and what can we really expect over the next 2 to 5 years from this industry?
Right, there's five questions in that,
say
already. Is it here to stay? What's here to stay? Blockchain is here to stay. The technology is here to stay. Okay? What's going to happen to that technology? Think about computers. I'm probably showing my age now, but my first computer was a ZX Spectrum, which is a tiny little thing with rubber keys. We used to have to put tape cassettes into a player to actually play a game. And the games were two-dimensional on a black screen. Okay? Computers actually haven't really changed that much since the first editions. They've developed, they've become better, but they still have the basic functionality of things like a motherboard, etc. So this technology is going to continually develop. We've already gone from something called the Bitcoin protocol to the Ethereum protocol, and now we're seeing others like Solana. There are developments of that technology, so that's going to stay. What we'll probably see is that it'll start to be used in real use cases. We'll start to see it like the government issuing a token,
okay,
which hopefully will not feel any different from using your bank card or Apple Pay, as I say, only it is on the blockchain. It will start to be used in ways that we don't really see, and it'll just become part of our ordinary lives. So think of real use cases. Real world assets being tokenized, things like that. That's a big thing for the last year that we've seen. When I say real world assets being tokenized, I think of anything and think of what if I could have a digital representation of my legal interest in that thing, okay? Like a certificate of sorts. Crypto, though, let's go back to that lovely word, the dangerous one, full circle here. Crypto being all of those tokens, coins, the things that are created off or out of blockchain, many will stay, many will go. There'll be other new ones as well.
Okay.
So I wouldn't necessarily be willing to sort of bet anything on those. Although most people think that sort of the top 10 by capitalization at the moment are probably still going to be around, for sure, and may even some of the top 100. There are thousands, by the way, of different tokens out there. In terms of what can we expect 2 to 5 years in Bermuda, I think we're going to see more companies continue to come to Bermuda to be regulated. I think we're going to see a far more sophisticated type of services that are being provided through them. And what I mean by that, I'm not being derogatory to those that are already here. What I mean is that the actual offerings that the businesses they're coming to conduct are going to become more sophisticated.
Okay.
We're going to see things like, in fact, we saw them last year. There are the tokenization of, so in other words, issuing a token that actually has income related to it, because it the underlying interest or the underlying assets are things like treasury bills. We're going to see the issuance of tokens that represent bonds, debt instruments. This is getting more complicated now, but taking the traditional financial world and tokenizing it, that's where I think we're going to see the most travel and movement this in the next few years, and Web3. So that's everything to do with the three-dimensional world online. The use of tokens and blockchain in that is also developing, growing very fast, because that's is needed. You can't use paper online, so you have to use something in there, and this technology works well for it.
Okay, thank you very much. A lot of growth in store for us here in Bermuda. I'm excited.
Me too.
And, well, I'd like to thank you today, my guest, Steve Rees-Davies, partner at Carey Olson, for coming on to today's podcast. Thank you again. And I'm Shivani Sate, and I've been your host.
You've been listening to the RG Podcast Network and the RG Business Navigate series with host Shivani Seth. Check the Royal Gazette for the next episode. Thank you for listening.